Harry the Hammer with further review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes exterior home services like roofing, siding, home additions, and much more. Call 716-626-NAIL.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skursky, joined by executive sports editor Perrin Keyes. Following the Bills' 28-21 victory over the Kansas City Chiefs in Week 9, game of the week in the NFL, game of the year probably for the Bills in terms of what it means in the standings, what it means for the defense, for Josh Allen. We will get to all of that in the show, but Perrin, I think we have to start on the defensive side of the football, and this, I think, was really a continuation of what we've seen that has been a vast improvement on that side of the ball, and I really trace that back all the way to halftime of the game against Atlanta before the bye week. Those 10 quarters from that point to now, the Bills have allowed 33 points, 21 against Kansas City, 9 against Carolina, and just 3 after halftime against Atlanta. And Sean McDermott was asked about that after the game, and I loved his answer. He said it was an attitude adjustment, and basically that you have to play defense nasty. And I think we've started to see more of that. When you look at the numbers, and I know, Perrin, you shared some of those with us last night as the game was going on or immediately after, but when you look at the number of times that they hit Patrick Mahomes, affected Patrick Mahomes yesterday, 15 times, 15 quarterback hits. That is a massive number. I believe the most in Mahomes' career. And I think that's the story of the game for me, at least on that side of the ball, is the pressure that they were able to generate against a future Hall of Fame quarterback.
I don't think there's any question. Let's start with this game going against Mahomes. You said it 15 times. You hit him 15 times. You get pressure on him. His completion percentage went way down. His overall completion percentage for the game, I'm sure we'll talk about this, was something like 44%. Whatever that amounts to, 15 to 34. It was the first time he'd ever had a completion percentage lower than 50 in his entire future Hall of Fame career. And listen, I mean, how many times have we seen that? You know, Tom Brady didn't, you know, any time, the rare occasion when he lost the Super Bowl is because he had pressure. Certainly the times when Patrick Mahomes himself has lost the Super Bowl is because Tampa Bay or Philadelphia was just absolutely crushing him in the pocket. So, they maintained their discipline. They kept him in the pocket, kept him from getting out of the pocket more often than not. Kept him from climbing the pocket and finding an escape route through the middle of the line of scrimmage when things broke down and when he couldn't find a wide receiver. And it made all the difference. And just as you said, it's going back now 10 quarters. And you have to give those guys all the credit in the world because this certainly didn't look like this didn't look like the 85 Bears coming out of the gate. And for the first 4 to 6 games of this season. The other thing I think that, if you're a Bills fan or if you're the Bills themselves, you have to feel really, really good about is that you're getting these. We'll get to Michael Hoyt, of course, here at some point in later on in the podcast. But, you have to feel good that this is coming not just from one guy. It's not just, of course, you'd love to have that one game record. But, sometimes it's coming up the middle. Sometimes it's coming from Hoyt. Sometimes it's coming from Joey Bosa, who showed out. Sometimes it's from Greg Rousseau, who showed out. At certain times, and Larry Ogunjobi, who's made a difference. We've seen in previous games, Deion Walker. So, the Bills, listen, they're beat up. They're beat up pretty bad, and they got beat up even worse coming out of this game. And, of course, you're going to have to hope that they get a little bit healthier, or maybe they add some reinforcements, and we'll get to that a little bit later, too, at defensive tackle. But for them to put the kind of pressure that they did on Mahomes and really, the other quarterbacks that they faced the last two games, that's made all the difference in the world. And it's certainly made a difference to the secondary, which is beat up as well.
Yeah. One of the things that stood out to me was they married the coverage with the rush really well, because those two things have to work out together. And Mahomes' average intended target in this game was deep. They were trying to make plays down the field. They were trying to push the ball down the field more so than he has at many times in his career. I believe I read this morning that it might have been his deepest average intended target, if not of his career, certainly in the most recent little while here. And so you know, those routes take some time to develop, and that gives the Bills pass rush a little bit of extra time. But if you're not getting the coverage that you got from Hairston and from Cole Bishop, especially for pass breaks, I thought he was maybe the star of the show defensively for the Bills. They had a lot of stars, but Cole Bishop was certainly one of them. And so that was the encouraging sign, was that the coverage in the second level of the defense, there were some breakdowns, no question, and that's going to happen against Kansas City. But by and large, I think it was a big improvement in that regard, and that allowed, in turn, the defensive line to do what it did in terms of pressure.
You mentioned, if we can talk about the secondary just for a little bit, since we're talking about a great defensive performance here. You know, we've talked several times, Jay, and I've said to you already that I've had to eat my words on Max Hairston, regardless of whether I thought he could do it. I really did think that maybe Sean McDermott was going to be a little leery, a little gun shy about playing a guy who hadn't had a lot of get ready to go time, so to say, in training camp or preseason with his injury. Regardless of whether that would have been the right move. Well, he wasn't shy about doing that, and it was definitely the right move. You can see these clips, if you didn't see it live, you're in a game where Hairston, in the middle of hand fighting, all the way down the field with guys like Xavier Worthy. I mean, that's pretty much, if he's not the fastest guy in the league, he's right up there, you know, near the top. And he's made a big, big difference with his speed and his athleticism at this point. And Cole Bishop, what else can you say? This has to have been the best game of his short, brief two-year pro career. Seven tackles, leads the team, four solo, tackle for loss, four pass breakups, several of those on key third downs and even a fourth down. And then, of course, you know, you talk about being aggressive, you know, hit somebody, tattoo somebody. Well, he wasn't afraid to deliver a blow into the ribs of a future Hall of Famer and tight end Travis Kelce down there, incidentally, in the end zone on what amounted to a goal line stand, which wound up being, I think, key, not necessarily. Well, yeah, it was key, no matter how you slice it, in terms of, okay, Patrick Mahomes did what he did toward the end of the half. Hits a home run ball to Hollywood Brown, and a smart timeout, one of the few smart timeouts, if I can say so, by Sean McDermott during this game, to be able to, you know, sort of reset and get his heavy package, his goal line package out there on the field. And then, you know, of course, you don't want to give up a field goal right before halftime, but they had to view that as a big, big win to be able to shut them out of the end zone going into the break. So it was a solid, solid job against an offense that was very, very hot going into.
Harry the Hammer goes to work.
Harry the Hammer here from House Crafters, and I am one happy hammer. We just finished this addition and kitchen, and it's beautiful. Look at this place. It's gorgeous. If you have a remodeling project in mind, a kitchen, bathroom, or mother-in-law apartment, one call really does do it all at House Crafters. For a free estimate, call House Crafters at 646-NAIL.
On to the offense, Jay. One Joshua Patrick Allen, he said, in so many words, he told everybody to R-E-L-A-X, if I can be so bold as to say that, as the offense struggled over the past couple of games, they did not look like themselves. He did not look like himself, taking too many chances, leaving the pocket early, going for a home run ball against New England and Atlanta, and even at times against Carolina, when certainly the passing game was not the star of the show. Listen, it doesn't get much better than 23 of 26, 273 yards, one touchdown, zero interceptions. The wide receivers again didn't play a huge role, other than Khalil Shakir, who had a team high seven receptions for 43 yards. But boy, this is the formula, right? You lean on your running game early on, you get into a rhythm. Joe Brady, as a play caller, gets into a rhythm. And then Josh Allen goes to work. He got all three tight ends into the mix. Jackson Hawes, Dawson Knox, and of course, first and foremost, Dalton Kincaid, six receptions, 101 yards. This was sort of the Bills' offense in full. Yes, you would have liked to have seen a little bit more from the wideouts, but nonetheless, you'll take 23 of 26 for 273 yards all day and all night, especially from an MVP quarterback who looks like an MVP quarterback, who's putting the ball in the right places, not trying to do too much, taking what the defense gives you, so to say, and looking like he's on the money and looking more, a whole lot more like Joshua Patrick.
Yeah, they didn't have to really get too creative with Allen either. Of his six carries, just one of them was a designed quarterback run. That was a third down, and they were able to convert. It was an 11-yard gain. You mentioned the six carries. The one touchdown passing, you know, kind of doesn't take into account the two that he had on the ground, obviously just from 1 yard out. But, he counts for three total touchdowns in this game. And let's just be honest, thoroughly outplays Patrick Mahomes, right? 15 of 34 for 250. A quarterback rating of 57.2 for Mahomes. Allen more than doubles that. He's at 123.2 quarterback rating. And so this is a situation where I think Allen gets up for these types of games, right, in this type of matchup. And the Chiefs bring out the best in him. And I think that you could say that in a lot of these matchups, even if the Bills aren't on the winning end in the postseason, right? Allen knew he needed to be Josh Allen, MVP Josh Allen, right? It wasn't enough to be the Allen that we saw against New England or Atlanta or even times against Carolina, particularly in the first half. They needed their quarterback to be their undisputed leader and best player. And as he so often is, he certainly was that. And yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, I think there's a clear trend emerging here midway through the season, right? It's that this passing offense right now is going to go through Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir. It's a run-first team, or maybe not necessarily run-first team, but run-heavy team with James Cook. And, you know, again, next segment, we're going to talk trade deadline. We'll talk about the possibility of a receiver, the need for a receiver. You know, you've got 14 targets and 13 catches from Kincaid and Shakir. Nobody else on the team was targeted more than twice or finished with more than two catches. So it was really those three guys, Cook, Kincaid, Shakir, along with Allen, and that was enough offensively. It's asking a lot of his quarterback, but they've always asked a lot of this quarterback, right? They've always asked Josh Allen to be the Superman and the superhero, and he certainly was that against Kansas City. Can he continue that? You know, we'll see. They got Miami next, and we know how Allen plays against Miami. We talked about a get-right game, right? We use that phrase against Carolina. Well, I don't know that necessarily you'd say it was a get-right game against the Panthers for Allen in particular. You sure as heck can say it about this game against the Chiefs. I mean, he's got to be leaving this game feeling like, hey, man, I'm back. You know, and we've seen that clip from him before using those exact words on the sideline. I feel like I'm back. Well, I would have to imagine that after the game this morning when they're watching the film, Allen's saying that exact same thing right now.
And I would guess that his teammates and his offensive coordinator and frankly, the rest of the league is a little bit, they're probably shivering a little bit too at that thought. Joshua Patrick Allen is back.
All right, Perrin, and every win is not without, you know, some concerns. And certainly, I think for the Bills, the biggest one to come out of this is the continual injuries on defense. You know, a week after we see Ed Oliver go down, at least for the rest of the regular season with a torn biceps, I think their next best interior pass rusher, or who has emerged as their best interior pass rusher in Michael Hoyt, also goes down, torn Achilles. And I got to tell you, Perrin, I mean, you're in the press box there for the home games. You could feel it even, you know, amongst the media members who cover the team regularly. This was a devastating injury. I think people felt really bad for this guy, you know, because he came in and he's played two games, right? You know, he's got to serve this suspension, but you talk about an immediate difference maker and just a guy that brings this energy and this juice that is so noticeable on the field, on the sideline, in the locker room. Selfishly, for what we do, the guy's a great quote. He's a great interview. You love talking to him, but you can't help but feel for a guy like that, right? You can just feel his passion in almost anything that he does. And to see him go down with that injury, just really tough to watch, you know. What it means for the team moving forward is, you know, you're going to have to, they were using him in some creative ways. You know, he was a really interesting piece for this team that now they're going to have to find a way to replace. You know, just from the personal level, though, you feel for the guy. And, you know, you find out after the game that the cart's coming out for him and he waves it off because he wants to sit on the sideline with his teammate to see the end of the game. I think that speaks to who Michael Hoyt is and kind of how he fit into this locker room and onto this defense in such a short amount of time on the field. So yeah, devastating injury. You hate to see it.
There's no question. I mean, you hit on all those points Jay, as it related to Hoyt, you know, it wasn't just the fact that they could move him around a little bit, and the fact that he brought so much, he brought so much to the pass rush, but there was a life that he brought to that defensive line, a life that he brought to that front seven. You know, he's one of these sort of all Red Bull kind of guys. You know, he's on the all Red Bull team, and the guys wanted to play for him and play with him. And so I think that speaks, you know, first of all, it speaks to the results speak for themselves in terms of the two games that he was on the field, what a difference he made against Carolina and against Kansas City. You know, it showed up in the box score, but it also showed up in terms of the way the guys reacted to him. And, you know, everybody saw the replay. Everybody saw exactly what happened. When it's non-contact like that, you know it's bad. It's bad news. And so, you know, where does that leave the Bills? You know, well, they already had needs, right? And, you know, I'm sure this is where we're going with this. I would assume that everybody, so many people would have felt like they may have had to take a long look at safety in the trade market, whether they actually did something or not before Sunday's game, before Cole Bishop really, really showed out, made them feel a whole lot better about their situation at safety. They certainly are, you know, the number one priority, I think everybody, or so many people, I shouldn't say everybody, so many people would have said, hey, you got to find a number one receiver. You got to find somebody who you really, really feel good about at the X position. You know, whether that's Jacoby Myers or Rashid Shaheed down in New Orleans or Chris Olave or whoever, maybe even try to swing a home run trade for Brian Thomas Jr., which I don't really think is on the table, but, you know, that's you know, maybe that's a discussion for somewhere down here over the next, say, 36 hours as we're recording this on Monday morning. But now you have to take maybe another long, long look at the defensive line, where you already had maybe a need at defensive tackle. You know, you have so many of these guys out, TJ Sanders, who may or may not be coming back soon, Ed Oliver, who, of course, is probably out until at least early in the postseason, if not all the way until the Super Bowl, should they get there. And it's getting pretty thin, and it's getting late early, and that then begs the question, Jay, you're so good at, you know, the salary cap and movement within the salary cap and all that. The Bills, that's really the big problem, as the Bills, you know, regardless of what would have happened with Michael Hoyt, and now that creating potentially another need. Part of the problem here for the Bills is that they're not $77 million under the cap or whatever. They only have so much room to play with. And so that then begs the question, what's realistic for them to be able to do here as we near the trade deadline at 4 p.m.
Yeah, $77 million. They're at $1.7 million, so they've got basically no space. So yeah, I mean, listen, you can do it, right? There's creative ways. So what has to happen is either money goes out, which I think is supremely unlikely, because really you got two guys on the roster. Well, I would even say one guy. You know, maybe you would have said AJ Epenesa before Hoyt gets hurt, but with Hoyt hurt, Epenesa's not going anywhere, and Epenesa, yeah, I think, is playing fairly well. The only other guy is Curtis Samuel. Can you find somebody to take his salary? Maybe that happens, but I think that even that is unlikely. I mean, the guy doesn't have much trade value, just based on the way he's been used. So the other option, and it's one that I think the Bills are going to have to implement, is they've got to restructure a contract, right? So you change some base salary into a signing bonus, and that frees up cap space. So there are ways to do it. I think the Bills, you know, depending on the swing that they want to take, you know, and for those who are maybe not as well-versed in the salary cap, we should explain. When you acquire a player at this point, you're taking on his base salary, and half of that has already been paid, right? And so a lot of these players have base salaries that are fairly low. A lot of their money is tied up in bonuses. The Bills aren't on the hook for that. So I think, you know, I think they're in the running for almost any move, any type of move they want to make. It may require some salary cap gymnastics on their part, but you know, you hit on Cole Bishop, and I wanted to start there because I thought safety for the longest time was maybe the biggest need. The issue there is that safety is a hard position to learn in the Bills defense. It's a hard position to play in the Bills defense. Sean McDermott, trust is a big thing at that position. It's taken Cole Bishop a heck of a lot of time to earn trust, right? And the reason that we're seeing Jordan Poyer on the field right now is because that trust is there. Jordan Hancock is starting to work in. We've seen that for Poyer. I think the emergence of Bishop, you know, should one game, you know, greatly alter the Bills' approach to the deadline? No. But Cole Bishop was so darn good in that game that you maybe say, hey, if this guy, if the light bulb has flipped on for him and he's got it, maybe you don't look at that position. Cornerback was a position that we had talked about weeks ago. They got to get a corner. Well, hey, you just got a first-round pick who comes back and looks like he can really play in Max Hairston. So maybe that position is not as big of a need. The edge rusher one is interesting because Hoyt gets hurt, right? Do they need an edge rusher? Well, I look at who they had replace Hoyt in this game. Javon Solomon, a draft pick last year. Fifth rounder, I get it, but had some pass rush chops, right? At Troy, set, I believe, a NCAA record in terms of sacks. You've got Landon Jackson, who you spent a third-round pick on, who has been a healthy and active. Well, guess what? It's time. Landon, you got to be ready to go now, right? And so I don't know that they have to go to edge rusher to replace Hoyt. I think desperately they need a defensive tackle. They've got to get better and deeper there. You don't have Ed Oliver coming back. Yeah, Daquan Jones will probably be back at some point, but Daquan Jones is not the penetrating interior pass rusher that this defense needs. That was the role that Hoyt was filling. So I would like to see them make a move for a defensive tackle. I would argue, flip a coin. It's either that or a wide receiver in my mind that these two sides of the ball need. I think without question, those are the two positions in my mind that Brandon Bean has to aggressively be on the hunt for here before 4 p.m. on Tuesday.
Okay, Jay, so let's take a look at the Bills' next opponent, the Miami Dolphins. Before we do that, let's take a look at the rest of the AFC. Patriots win again. Of course, they're 7-2. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, three of their next four opponents have losing records. They've got a last-place schedule, of course. So the Bills are a half game behind. They're really one game behind because, of course, New England holds the tiebreaker. So they're still going to have work to do to overtake the Patriots. In the AFC East, the Steelers, 5-3. They lead the AFC North. Ravens may be able to come on strong. They're two games behind, and so you have to continue to look out for them because they're not out of it yet. The Colts lose another game, so they're now at 7-2. And the Broncos keep winning too. They come back, a tough game against the Texans, and so they continue to lead the AFC West. But looking around, we'll go back to the Dolphins. They fire their general manager Chris Greer coming out of that loss to Baltimore on Thursday night. Who knows if this is actually true, but the rumors are that Stephen Ross, the owner, is still, I don't want to say satisfied, but he believes in the path set forward by Mike McDaniel, the coach, which sort of leads me to believe this is an old colleague of mine who used to say, hey, you're in a really, really bad spot if you're weak at the all-important position of owner. It's starting to make me wonder if the Dolphins don't have an ownership problem like the Jets do and have had for quite a while now, where I don't want to bury the guy, but I don't know that Mike McDaniel is the guy. I don't know that he's got control of that locker room anymore at this point. They had a nice win the week before, but then they certainly laid an egg there on Thursday. And I just don't see, they're 2-7, and they don't look like they've got a quarterback that they're going to have to be able to, that they're going to be able to depend on long-term. A little bit of a mess as the Bills go down for a well-timed November trip to Miami Garden.
Yeah, Perrin, and I mean, who's going to be left for Miami, right? We've already heard Jalen Phillips on the way from Miami to Philadelphia in a trade here on Monday morning. Bradley Chubb, Matthew Judon, edge rushers, also rumored to be available at the trade deadline. I don't think they'll trade Jalen Waddle, but you never know, at wide receiver. And so I think this is a team in Miami that's going to be selling off some pieces here before the trade deadline. So that obviously helps the Bills in this matchup. I mentioned before when we talked about Allen, I mean, he routinely sort of flambés the Dolphins. And so I would expect that to continue in this game. I mean, I think Miami's tanking without really tanking by hanging on to McDaniel. I mean, they're not going to feel bad about losing games at this point. I mean, they are staring the inevitable divorce from Tua and McDaniel after this season. I think it's just a matter of time. So yeah, this is a game where the Bills absolutely have to go down and, put together a convincing victory, a convincing performance. We know there'll be a ton of Bills fans there. There always is in South Florida. So this is going to be a pretty friendly environment as far as a division game can go. I want to look around a little bit of the AFC, though, and you mentioned Denver in winning and improving to 7-2. The Bills are in a position now where they might end up rooting for the Chiefs at some point, which is crazy to sound, right?
Right.
Yep. Because Kansas City still has two games left against Denver. And I think the big thing, and Perrin and I wrote about this a little bit in Sunday ahead of the game against Kansas City, the one seed is totally back on the table for me for the Bills after this win. The Colts losing helps in that regard. Denver now is a threat, right, with only two losses in that. And so if the Bills win, the Chiefs are on bye now. If the Bills win, they are three full games ahead of the Chiefs when you factor in the head-to-head tiebreaker. That's a situation where the Bills could be rooting for the Chiefs to beat the Broncos at least one of those matchups down the stretch. So I think the standings got a lot closer yesterday. You mentioned New England and the ease of their schedule. I was doing some reading today about it. It's not just the easiest schedule this year. If current records kind of continue the way they are, the Patriots are playing one of the easiest schedules in history. And so they've got a pretty easy path. Now, their next game, I believe, is probably their toughest until they see the Bills again, and that's against Tampa Bay. And so I think Bills fans are going to be huge Buccaneers fans. On Sunday, that game is in Tampa Bay. So, you know, Baker Mayfield and company are going to have a lot of fans in Buffalo next Sunday. So, yeah, I think the conference got a lot tighter yesterday. The Bills winning obviously helped in that regard. But again, I think the one seed is really back on the table for this team because of that win against the Chiefs.
I don't think there's any question. Very, very briefly, just to sort of put a finer point on, hey, you never know what's going to happen from week to week. This is why I've said before here on this show, Jay, that I'm fascinated by gambling and all that other kind of stuff, but I don't wager because I just know I'd wind up on welfare in 10 seconds flat. If anybody can figure out, if anybody had the Vikings beating the Lions, the Panthers beating the Packers, not for nothing, especially the Panthers beating the Packers after having looked really, really bad against the Bills, the Patriots needing everything to beat the Falcons. This is a weird league, but yes, everything's back on the table for the Bills. They're going to have some work to do. They put themselves in a little bit of a spot, but as we've seen, going around the league just over the past 36 to 48 hours, or 72 hours, if you want to include the Thursday night game, which wasn't much of a game itself, certainly something could happen. Something could happen that you don't expect for it to happen. And that in terms of, say, the Broncos losing a game you don't think they could they would expect to lose. Even, if you're a Bills fan, you have to hope the Patriots slip up against one of these last place teams against a very, very weak schedule. So it's all on the table. All the Bills, and certainly the Bills looking a whole lot more of a complete team. Having played what I think was their most complete game on Sunday against the Chiefs, everything is back on the table. And so it will be an interesting month of November as we go down the road. The Bills, of course, will play the Dolphins on Sunday, and then they'll have a game against the Buccaneers and Texans, two very tough teams, the Texans especially with a very tough defense, followed by the Steelers. So no weeks off. Good news is we'll be here to cover it all. We'll be back here on Monday on Further Review to discuss to sort through Jay's time in the sun down in Miami, and we'll be back here all week, all day and all night on BuffaloNews.com, of course, and with the Buffalo News. So please stay with us and stay with us all season and subscribe to the Buffalo News if you would please. For Jay Skirsky, Perrin Keyes, this has been Further Review Podcast. Thank you for listening and watching along.
This is Harry the Hammer for Further Review by House Crafters. House Crafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes interior home services as well as windows and doors. Call 716-626-NAIL.